This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I am your host, John Hudspeth. Welcome to the show. We got a really good one. And more importantly than that, this episode right now that you're listening to, this is the last episode before you can legally hunt white-tailed deer in the state of Oklahoma and many other places. But, you know, right now, all we care about is Oklahoma. And my goodness, the time is here. Super excited. Man, bear season's opening, archery season's opening, dove's already open, teal season's open. We still got a little bit before, you know, the real waterfowl season, but you can go hunt some teal. Just a fantastic, amazing time of year. Obviously what we live for. I think this weekend is the official opening or first day of fall, whatever you want to call it. I go more by temperature than the calendar personally, but, you know, that's what they say. So yeah, we got a really good one coming up. Few things to touch on before we get there. Few updates. Biggest update and a very unfortunate one. I talked a lot last week about how I was all jazzed up to, you know, get out to the ranch and plant my food plots and do all this work and be ready for the season. I was able to fill my feeders. I got all of my feeders up and running, filled, all that, so that's good. I was able to set up my blind finally that had blown over in the wind, so I got that set up. But unfortunately, my brother was actually cutting hay, and if you've grown up around ag, ranching, farming, whatever, you know that that comes first, especially before, you know, a luxury like hunting. And so, like I said, I was up there. My brother was cutting hay. He had some breakdowns. He felt super bad, but you know, I told him, like, hey, you need this stuff worse than I do. And so he did get everything baled, luckily. But again, I was not able to get any of my food plots planted. And so I did, he was able to spare our small tractor for a little bit, which won't pull our drill, but it did pull the brush hog. And so I was able to get a few of my paths mowed and everything. And honestly, like a lot of my food plots, you know, I just sprayed them, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago when all the soybeans were still up and everything. And so most of them are pretty much ready to plant. So I did take the brush hog and hit a few little spots where maybe I had missed spraying and everything. And so my plan, I thought I was going to have a tractor on Sunday to plant still. And so my plan was to go ahead and plant Sunday without spraying, because again, a lot of that stuff was still dead. But now, we didn't get any rain last week like we were expecting. We did get a little bit of rain finally this week. And so, I don't know, I, I'm obviously I have to wait till I get there, but I might go ahead and spray now just because, you know, what little was there might have gotten an extra little kick. And obviously at this point, you know, I'm going to be planting a little later than I would like. And so more than likely, I am going to go ahead and spray again and then plant. When that will be, I don't know yet. we'll get into that. It's all kind of turned into a little bit of a mess this weekend. I'm excited about it, but my wife's grandpa, like right, I think it was before we were married, I was talking to him. He's a huge sports fan, and I was just kind of getting into college football, and he told me that one of his bucket list things is to go to a game either at Death Valley, LSU, or at Kyle Field for Texas A&M. Just, you know, he's actually not a fan of either of those teams, but just, you know, the traditions and the craziness and all that stuff. Like, he just wanted to experience that. And so my brother-in-law has season tickets for Texas A&M. And so this weekend, my wife, we're taking, you know, her grandpa and grandma, we're going to drive down there to College Station and go to the A&M versus Auburn game. And so that's going to be a lot of fun, but obviously I won't be able to do any deer things that weekend. And then the next weekend, which, you know, as you're listening to this, it's the upcoming weekend, is stinking deer season. And so, you know, I went on kind of a rant last week about how, you know, for a lot of people, hunting opening day probably isn't the best option and how you should maybe avoid it and blah, blah, blah. Well now I got to eat a little crow because my number one target buck, Rock, that I mentioned, 5-year-old, 10-point, just a good-looking deer. Like I said, just a solid deer, nothing crazy, but a good buck. He has not shifted. He is still in the same spot he's been all summer. He's daily. Like, I can't think of the last time he has not been there one, you know, at least during the night, and probably 2 months. And just recently, he has been showing up in daylight, you know, right at the end of shooting hours, but definitely in shooting light. And so, you know, I talked about maybe doing a little bear hunting this year. I talked about how hunting opening day is not always the best plan, but man, I mean, if my number one buck is showing up in daylight, I think that might be the exception to the rule. And I don't know if I can not hunt him. And so if, again, we still got, you know, a couple days before the season gets here. But anyway, he's showing up at a spot where my big food plot is. And so that's why I'm saying the timing's a little weird, because if I think I have a chance to kill that buck Sunday evening, I don't think I want to be in there on Saturday, you know, spraying and planting and driving the tractor all around and all that stuff. And so I don't know. Like I said, I'm just going to have to kind of wait and see how it plays out. If he goes nocturnal or shifts, then most likely I'll spend Saturday planting food plots and then maybe go try to kill a bear on Sunday, maybe hunt somewhere else. I don't know. That's one thing that, you know, I do like, and I know why they do it, is, you know, once October 1st hits, you can no longer buy a bear tag. And I know they do that so somebody doesn't shoot a bear and then go buy the tag. And I respect them. I think that's a great idea, actually. But one kind of unfortunate thing is if you don't buy one before that, then you're stuck without a bear tag. So yeah, like I said, a lot of big decisions coming up. But you know what? These are the decisions that I love. Very much a first world problem, so I don't mind making that. So I wish I had more kind of concrete stuff for you guys of what, you know, what I'm going to be doing this upcoming weekend, but I just don't. But obviously, you know, that's kind of the fun part of it too. So anyway, that's all the deer stuff that's been going on. My right shoulder is a little bit sore right now, actually, because I did a lot of shooting in the last couple days. I went out one day and had like a pretty dang legit dove hunt. The first good dove hunt I've had in a lot of years, and I screwed it up royally. I shot terribly. Like, I forgot how humbling dove hunting can be. Those dadgum critters, and they started me off with a lot of hope. So sitting there at the truck, had a couple other guys out there, dove flies by, and I pull up and bam, first shot, crush this sucker. Sweet. Sitting there, another dove flies by, first shot miss, second shot, fold them up. So I'm like 2 for 2 on birds. Another bird flies by, I miss, another bird flies by and I crush it. So I'm like 3 for 4 on birds at this point. So I'm like, dude, like this is like, it's about to go down. It's still early. Like we had just got there. And so I go out and I sit next to this cottonwood tree and it, I don't know what it was, but like from that moment on, I could not hit anything. And I think part of the problem was there, like, honestly, there were so many dove and like they were just coming from everywhere. Like I couldn't get, like there wasn't like a nice easy shot that I kind of got to do over and over again in practice. Like a bunch of them came straight at me. I actually had 3 land in my tree from, they came from a direction I couldn't shoot because one of my buddies was over there. But I had 3 come and land in the tree and then of course fly straight back towards my buddy after they saw me. So I still couldn't shoot. But like I was in position A and I just kept missing. Like they'd come straight at me. And to me, that's the hardest shot. When they come straight at you and they're kind of high and, you know, some are flying fast this time of year, some are still kind of going slow. So I'd miss like 2 of those, but then one would come like floating by to my left, nice and low. And so then I'm trying to adjust and figure out my lead for that. And I'd miss that one. And then one come straight across in front of me and I'd miss that one. Then they'd be back to flying straight at me. And all that to say, did terribly. I only killed 1 more bird the rest of the evening. Had to admit, like I probably missed a limit's worth after that point. But yeah, so lots of shooting that evening. And then the next day I actually went and did a charity skeet shoot, which was a heck of a lot of fun. Only the second time I've ever done anything like that. It was all doubles, which was very challenging. One of the guys on our team, he's actually like a semi-pro trap shooter. You know, like he travels around and does all the different competitions. And he even said, like, man, this is kind of a above average for like your, you know, fun shoot. So yeah, like I said, lots of doubles flying all over the place. I think I ended up going 52 for 80, like shot 52 out of 80 targets, which I felt pretty dang good about. Like that's over 50%, you know, not quite 3/4. But had a really good time. Our team ended up finishing 4th out of 22 teams. So missed out on a trophy, unfortunately, but you know, still did pretty good. And the best part about it was for a great cause. It was for a children's hospital. So yeah, just lots of fun, great time. So yeah, man, that's what I've been up to. That's what I got coming up. Like I said, some uncertainty with the hunting and all that, but I'm sure we'll touch on what I decided next week. So be looking forward to that. As far as this week, we have a really cool episode, a fun one that I really enjoyed recording. We got our old buddy Charles Admire. He's been on several times at this point, and Charles and I have known each other forever. And we just have a good old kind of like BS, like we're just excited about hunting season. We cover a bunch of different stuff. We both talk about our whitetail plans. Charles is going on a mule deer hunt. He's going on a sandhill crane hunt. Last year we did a bunch of duck hunting together. So we kind of talk about that and how we've both kind of rekindled our love of waterfowl. So we talk about that at the end in just a really, really good episode. So yeah, that's what I have for you this week. We got a couple awesome guests lined up for the next couple weeks. Obviously, hopefully, I'll be hunting, so we'll have that stuff too. So if you're ready for some good quality listening content, we got plenty coming at you. So as always, thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. And we'll get into the episode right after a quick word from our partners right after this. There is truly no place like the great outdoors in Oklahoma. When you're out in the wild, you want your wireless devices to work. Unlike other carriers, Bravado Wireless believes that coverage in rural areas is important so that you stay connected. With competitively priced plans and coverage where you need it, the mission of Bravado Wireless is to keep you connected no matter where you are. Visit bravadowireless.com or check them out at one of their retail locations. Bravado Wireless, the power of connection. Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's show. And today we have my old buddy, Charles Admire. How are you doing, Charles?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. Pretty good. And you've been on the show a few times, and so hopefully people are aware. But I wanted to start this off with a fun fact. And a fun fact about you, of course. And most of the people listening to this show have probably heard of a guy by the name of Dale Brisby. And what brought this to my mind is I just saw on Facebook that he just killed his first elk and he's been like training with Cam Haynes and all this stuff. And you are actually close personal friends with Mr. Dale Brismy. Isn't that right?
It is. I've known Dale for, 15, 17 years, something like that. And he's a good dude, got into bow hunting. And I don't think you could have a better mentor right now than Cam. And so I'm super stoked for him. I actually just saw that post right before you said it. So yeah, Dale's the man.
Yeah. Yeah. And another fun fact, one of his first videos ever, I think one that kind of helped, you know, really jumpstart him and go viral or whatever you want to say, is when he was, you know, running and jumping over hogs and roping them and stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you were actually a cameraman on that set, right?
Yeah, I was getting one of the angles, and he's Dale's super handy. I am not nearly as handy. And anyway, yeah, we tried over and over and over to loop one over top, and I don't have that kind of touch. He got close several times, and then finally he was like, I'm going to run straight at that joker and drop the loop over top of him. And I was like, do it, man. And that's how we ended up getting him. So it's funny. That video might be 10 years old now, but yeah. It's funny. Yeah, Dale's wild, man.
He is. But anyway, that was a very random start. I do want you to introduce yourself. So real quick, in case somebody hasn't heard one of your episodes before, go ahead and just give us a little bit of who you are.
Okay. Rundown. Did a few years in the Marine Corps as an artillery officer. Now I got a little family, got a wife and a boy who's 16 months old, and then one on the way. And like a lot of hunters, I guess, that listen to your show, love to deer hunt and hog hunt. And then the newer passions are like duck hunting, and then just being opportunistic about going out west. I went on your elk hunt a few years ago, and I had a bear tag. This year I got crane and in the panhandle of Texas that's coming up that I'm super stoked about. And then a mountain muzzleloader hunt that I got a pretty funny story about sighting in my muzzleloader. We'll talk here in a little bit about, but
anybody who listens to the show knows that I have a love hate relationship with muzzleloaders. So definitely looking forward to that.
I think God was looking down on me and was like, man, this poor fool, I'm going to make sure that he doesn't die today. it was interesting. I'll tell you that. So,
Good. Well, as you just said, we got a lot to cover today, but really the purpose behind this episode is just a good old hunting season's here. Let's talk about it. We're excited. And let's just kind of talk about the fun stuff that we have coming up. And more than likely, you and I will get together again after the season to do another episode and hopefully do a little hunting together this year. We did that last year. And man, I think you and I, we've known each other going on 30 years, something like that. You and my brother went to kindergarten together. But here in the last few years, I think we've gotten a little closer and kind of started doing some hunting together and really enjoyed it. So looking forward to this episode. And I think to kick things off, since it's almost deer season, I feel like we definitely need to start there. I know you just got a picture of a good one. You hunt a little bit of kind of central West Texas area. So tell us a little bit about that buck and any others you're thinking, and just walk us through your whitetail season a little bit.
Sure, you bet. And so I guess I'll go back to last season. The buck that's been on my target list, gosh, for 3 years now. We got some family land that's on a small parcel. I mean, it is a small parcel between three fairly significantly larger places. And it's got a creek running through it. So we'll get bucks that travel through a little bit. And so there's always a chance to see something that's a little different, which is fun. But the one that had been consistent on our place, at least during deer season, the past few years, I had nicknamed Highbrow. And I saw him daylighted once, but he got to the feeder before I did. And so I actually backed out and then tried to go kill him the next day. And that was, gosh, it was like November 4th or something like that. So, I mean, right in the middle of the rut. And he had as much a chance of being on our place as any one of the kind of the three places that are in pretty close proximity there. So I'd had history with him. I think and this is what I'm getting into for what's coming up, but I think that I had first seen him as a three-year-old. And so when I was last year, when I saw him, he must have been, let's see, that would have made him like five, I think, because I'd had 3 years of pictures with him. But the deal is if you look at him, and his horns grew almost the exact same every year. But if you looked at him on those pictures, and you might have been able to tell, or someone who's very savvy on aging deer, like, they're just hard to age in our area, real hard to age. They're not necessarily big bodied. And until it gets to season, their necks all look about like, you know, an Oklahoma doe neck or something like that. You know, they're not real thick. Those secondary sex characteristics aren't necessarily super prominent. So that being said, this year, what I've seen is really a curveball. We've been super dry, but we have a spring-fed tank. And so I think as kind of a side effect of that is that we're seeing a lot of consistency with like half a dozen bucks. And what's hard about it is it's hard aging them. Some of them, their bodies are actually bigger. I think there's probably three that are older, you know, maybe in the 3 to 4 range. I shouldn't say older, but older than the other ones. 3 to 4 range. Two of them are definitely, I'm guessing, you know, outside of those strong secondary sex characteristics, probably the two oldest. But it's just hard for me to get like a good, good judge on them. One of them I'm calling Pisa, because one of his sides is like an inch taller than the other side. So it's funny, he's leaning, like his rack is just leaning. So he's coming around. He's a good deer. He's like, I think he's 9, but it's, you know, I got one of the earlier cell cam models, so it doesn't have the most clear pictures, but he's been around, gosh, late August to the first week in September. He was there every day. I've seen him a little bit more sparsely since, but he's around. And then the one that I sent you a picture of, or maybe posted, I can't remember which one. He's an 8 point, and he's one of the other, or the other one that seems older. Although again, secondary sex characteristics aren't super strong. How many times can I say that? Sorry, I'm coming off of, for everyone listening out there, I had an ear procedure, whatever we're going to call it, earlier today, and I'm coming down off meds a little bit. So bear with me, folks.
You're doing good. Doing good. Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm seeing. Those are the two that I'm looking at. And right now, just kind of planning around, since we got a little one and my wife's pregnant, planning around that. I think I'm going to go in maybe once in October, hit November hard. And then for whatever reason, we start seeing more about 10 days before Christmas. So like December 10th through 15th is usually a pretty good spot for us. So those are kind of the timelines that I'm trying to get down there and be pretty intentional about getting after some whitetail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. That timeline you mentioned in December, I feel like that's always my slowest time. You know, bucks are usually kind of getting done with rut. They're worn down. They're trying to recover. And I feel like they just need a break. Like they need some rest. And so I'm wondering if maybe they're getting a bunch of pressure on the neighbors or something like that. So maybe they think of y'all's place as the safe little hidey hole they can go hold up. I don't know. That's interesting.
You might be right. It's funny. Two of the last three seasons, I've killed bucks kind of that week on our place after letting it rest kind of the tail end of November. So that honestly might be what it is. People are hitting November so hard. There's not a bunch of bow hunters around us. And so that rifle pressure probably just pushes them to our place. You're probably right about that.
Gotcha. I need to, oh, well, I think I need to preface that. I think I might be eating a little crow myself this year at the beginning of the season. Cause anybody who's listened to this show, I'm almost a little down on opening day. I think I even did a big spiel about it last week. I just feel like for most people, you know, they're all jacked up. They're excited. They just want to get out there and hunt. But, you know, typically opening day, it's hot. The conditions are usually bad. And so I feel like most people end up hurting themselves opening day. And I actually fell victim to it last year, even after I had preached against it, because I was out there. I think I had one buck that was coming in like right after shooting light, like 2 days before or something. And I was like, I'm just going to go for it. And I had my new box blinds. So I was like, the wind, like I can control the wind a little bit more. And of course I get in that thing and, I looked like a little brownie in an Easy Bake oven just cooking because it was so hot. And so of course I have all the windows open and everything, trying to not sweat to death. And right at last light, I actually had deer coming from two different directions, and of course the ones who were a little bit more downwind smelt me, they blew and ran off to the south. The deer coming from the other way, they saw that, they blew and ran off to the north, and I just completely blew the spot up, just like I had warned others not to do. But this year, my number one buck that I've, or number one target buck, I should say, I named him Rock because I set one of my cameras on a food plot this summer to video. And I don't know how many videos I got of this deer that I thought were a picture because he's just standing there super still. And Rock rolled off the tongue a little smoother than like Statue or something like that. So named him Rock. And but he's been coming in fairly consistently during shooting hours in the evenings. And so I know we're still, 8 or 9 days away as I'm recording this. But if he stays on that pattern, I might have to slip in there and try to get him opening day. I don't know.
Heck yeah, man. So you got Rock coming in. You posted several times about 2%. Yep. You got any other bucks that you're kind of eyeing, or are those the two there?
Man, I have one who I'm going to try really hard not to shoot. I think he's actually bigger than Rock, but I'm pretty sure he's a 4-year-old. And so I think if he had one more year, I think he could be really special. He's got a big split G2 on one side. I call him Slingshot. 2%'s been pretty consistent, actually, again at night. Funny story about him. So I was up there this last weekend, and my plan was to plant my food plots. And my brother, who you know very well, forgot to mention that he was going to be cutting hay. And so he was using all the tractors and stuff. So I wasn't able to plant my food plots, but I, got all my feeders filled and some other little knick-knacky stuff. And when I got done setting everything up, I had one extra cell cam. And I was thinking to myself, like, how can I use this camera, to benefit me, to really use it, not just stick it somewhere? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure out where this dadgum 2% buck is coming from. Like, I know he's coming off the neighbors, but I just felt like if I could maybe figure out where, because I have pictures of him on our property in another spot, but, it's kind of like an L, and the neighbors is in the middle of the L, so I know he comes through there. And so I went off the feeder about 75 yards to where this fence was, and I just set the camera up on the fence, and I faced it out into the pasture. And I was like, you know what? Like, hey, I'll either get him on this or I won't. And maybe that'll give me like some idea of where which direction he's coming from. So I set that camera up on Sunday. Sunday night, it worked like a charm. I got a picture of him. He was coming from behind the camera. I was like, all right, step one complete. I'm going to leave this camera there. Next time I'm up there, I'll move it and stuff. Well, I kid you not, that was Sunday night. I got that picture of him. Monday, my camera starts going nuts. I was like, what the heck? And my brother turned cows in that pasture. And I have not got another picture of him on that camera or at the feeder because the feeder's hilarious. Out in that pasture. And so yeah, 2% is a little MIA at the moment. I know once the cows go away, he'll probably come back. There's another buck. Actually, I think you might have seen that. I put him on Instagram about a week ago or something. I was asking for name suggestions. And I'm pretty sure this buck is super old. I don't know. He's kind of confusing me, honestly. Really, really tall G2s, but just pencil thin, like zero mass at all. And I do think this year, like our mass across the board suffered this year, I'm guessing because of the drought. We actually had really good length, but no mass. Quick funny story about that buck. So I put that up on Instagram and did like a poll or whatever, like asking for name suggestions. And I almost did it like as a joke to myself because I knew what the replies were going to be. I think I got 8 Mr. Crabs. I think I got 6 Crab Claw. I got 1 Bartholomew, which I actually really thought was funny. So I don't have a name for him. I was trying to think of something other than Crab Claw, just because I feel like that's a common name. But I think that buck would be a shooter. I mean, he's a decent antlered buck, but to me, the first pictures I got him, like, he just looks old, like ancient old. And so that deer, Stone and 2%, those are definitely the top three. The reason 2% is not my number one is because, just like in the past, I just don't know if he's killable. Like, I just don't know if I have an opportunity to legitimately hunt him when he's on our property in daylight. I'm going to be trying. I have some ideas. You know, I think I might have a chance during muzzleloader season. During the rut, you know, a lot of my rut hunting this year is going to be in Iowa because I drew that tag. So I want to, you know, spend a lot of time up there. So I'm thinking if I do kill that buck, it'll probably be either muzzleloader season or, as usual, late season. The few close encounters I've had or where he's thought about daylighting have been late season. And so that's, if I were to call my shot, it'd be one of those two times.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Hey, there's one thing I totally forgot to tell you that I don't know why it just hit me. I got a deer that's piebald.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's young, you know, but it'd be really hard for me to pass if he came out. Like, yeah. his neck looks like a paint horse, you know.
Yeah,
it's just on one side and it comes down kind of on the front. And he's like, you know, mainframe 8, but I mean, he's probably 3.
Yeah,
you know, and he's not really to his potential yet, mm-hmm. but he is freaking cool looking. Like, that cape, it'd be pretty fun to have that cape, but
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. We will see. Probably cooler heads will prevail in the situation, because sometimes they just look bigger on camera anyway, you know, but yeah, I'll have to send you a picture. He's pretty cool looking.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of those that you really need to decide before he comes out,
because
you
don't want to.
I mean, I wouldn't blame you if you did by any means, but yeah, that's one thing that I found with myself. If I have one of those tweener bucks, like, you know, maybe that, maybe not. If they come out in front of me and they're in bow range, that maybe goes right out the window a lot of times.
I know. I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to text it to you actually while we're talking, so you can look at it and be
amazed.
Tell me your thoughts. Yeah, maybe not be amazed, but at least tell me your thoughts. He's cool looking.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, I will, you know, just for listeners and stuff, like, for me personally, like, my hit list is always flexible too, because, you know, it's still early. Like, it's not even October yet. Like, bucks are still shifting their patterns. Like, you never know what's going to show up. And so that's part of the reason I almost never do the whole one buck thing, where, you know, I know so many people, like, maybe it's, they get to a spot in their hunting career and they just like the challenge or whatever, and they're like, okay, like, this buck, no matter what, I'm killing this buck. Man, I'm always fluctuating. Like, if a good random buck shows up, to me, like, there's no point to not go hunt that deer and try to kill it. So, you know, I named those three, but, you know, I had a really nice 8-point last year that showed up a little bit. I passed him during rifle season. You know, there's a good chance he'll be around at some point. And I feel like every year we get one or two just kind of random bucks that show up. And so yeah, I'm not, let's just say my list isn't finalized.
Yeah. And same way, we'll probably see about half these deer during season. But you know, it's fun to think about now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, man, like I said, we mentioned several different topics I want to hit. I want to hear about this mule deer hunt.
Yeah. So, so one of the Marines that worked for me, avid hunter, himself, I've been putting in, for a few years in New Mexico, just because I'm not as regimented as you are to build a spreadsheet and do preference points and everything else. And New Mexico doesn't do that. But I'd been putting in for several years for antelope, for elk, and for mule deer. And I'd always pick this Marine's brain, because he's from out there. They got a ranch that's been in their family for just generation upon generation upon generation. And so he's an avid hunter. He now's a public land firefighter. Good dude. And we've kept in touch. And so he'll tell me, hey, you know, this is this is one that you might have better odds getting in, or this is where big animals are, whatnot. And I'd been doing it with my bow. Well, I hadn't been able to draw with my bow, and so I just got an idea. Well, let's see if it changes my luck to do it with muzzleloading tackle. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have a muzzleloader, and honestly, the only thing I know about muzzleloading is what I got taught in the schoolhouse about loading cannons. I was like, well, can't be that hard, and you know, reached out to you for some of your advice and whatnot. And so that being said, I drew for the unit that actually their family ranch is in. So I'll be hunting just north of the border between Texas and New Mexico. Some of it's BLM land, some of it's private land, but he let me know that they're not necessarily going to be, you know, Pope and Young or anything like that, but you know, his dad's out there and he'll keep an eye out for good looking deer. So he sent one over and he hasn't said whether it's on the place or not. Man, I was drooling. I mean, it was a typical, you know, 4x4. Actually, it might have just little nubs for brow tines too. You know, sometimes those mule deer don't have much of brow tines. Well, it has, I think, just little nubs for brow tines, and it's more in the desert. So it might not be on their place, but dude, this thing, I mean, it's, do you still measure them like G1, G2 and everything else like whitetail? Do you know?
I'm pretty sure. So when I lived in Idaho, you know, there's a lot of people, most people either hunted one or the other, even though you could hunt both. But gotcha. Like all anybody cared about up there was the inside spread. Like you never heard a score. I mean, sometimes they'd be like, yeah, 4x4 or 5x5 or whatever, but almost always it was like, yeah, I shot a 32-inch mule deer. I shot a 36-inch mule deer. And it was all, they were always talking about the inside spread. Like that was their big number.
Okay. So he has it all. That's what I was gotcha. Fixing to get to next. His spread, he's outside those big old wide ears. Mm-hmm. At each branch, you know, I mean, he looks like he's at least, even on the ones that are far out front, I'm going to pull up a picture of him right now while we're talking about him. But even the ones on the front, I mean, he's like, they look like those are at least 9 inches a piece. And he is just huge. Anyway, not sure if he's on their place or not, but it'll be fun either way. So yeah, it's the second rifle season or second muzzleloader season, excuse me, for New Mexico. And this is the story I alluded to earlier. So not too long ago, I went out to sight in this rifle. And so I took, you know, the recommended projectiles, the CVA, ELR. I got a breakover Acura that I found on sale. And so I was doing all the things. I cleaned it before. I cleaned it after 3 shots each time. And, you know, I mentally told myself that like, hey, it's going to kick a little bit, but I was not prepared. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing bounced me and I was laying in the prone and I had it on the bipod and like, even I took a video, I think of maybe the third shot and it is just barking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all I had in me, and I mean, I'm 6'1", 220. And so, I mean, I can stand a lot of kick or whatever. And it was just bouncing me. So I was like, well, you know, I'm going to cut it off at 8 shots today. So I didn't think anything else of it. I was cleaning it. And then like in the back part of my mind, I was like, do you think there's a max powder charge that's allowed to go in this weapon? And so I had weighed out, I mean, I'm, you know, I know that I need to weigh out to like get extremely precise. I'm trying to get as precise as possible, you know, down range. And so I'm doing everything the same, breathing the same, trigger control, all the things, including like the exact weight of the grains.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way CVA does it is they do it by like volume and then by weight. Like they have a limit. Well, I had messed it up. I thought that their recommendation for weight was volume.
Oh.
And I don't know if you know this, but it will always read higher volume wise than it will weight wise. So like, for example, their recommendation is don't go above 120 grains by volume of Blackhorn 209 or by weight of 84.5 grains or something like that, right? Guess what I was loading into that joker?
I'm guessing like 120 grams or whatever the weight. Yeah.
By volume, or excuse me, by weight.
Yeah.
And so it was like, it was scaring the hell out of like 160 by volume. That's why I was saying like, it was grace that, that I didn't get hurt or anything. But
yeah,
after I saw that and read that, I went through and looked at everything and had a gunsmith look at it, and he just kind of laughed and was like, yeah, don't do that ever again. But I mean, the weapon looks fine, so you should be good with it. So anyway, there's me being a little bit of a dummy, but getting saved from a bad situation. So sure you check for all the listeners out there that are not into black powder yet, make sure that you check what your weapon can actually handle.
So gosh, this upcoming season will be like my fourth year doing muzzleloader, and so I'm still learning. And like I said earlier, I have a love-hate relationship with it. You know, the first year I did it, I had an old used gun, and it actually cost me two nice bucks over the course of like 4 days. And but now, I got rid of that thing, have a much nicer gun. But I remember this new, it's also a CVA. And I remember the first time I shot it, I was kind of prepared, like you just said, like I knew it was going to kick more, but it's a different kind of kick. Like a rifle is real, like quick punch, you know, that type of thing. I feel like a muzzleloader is almost more of like a slow push. And so I feel like it digs in more and pushes more. And I got lucky. I almost scoped myself that very first time. Because I was just kind of all up on the gun, like I would be with a rifle, and it actually hit me. It just, luckily it didn't cut. But I can't remember if I actually moved the scope or if I'm just a little bit more careful about not sticking my face up there. But it is different. And that's why I tell people all the time, no matter if you're using a bow, muzzleloader, rifle, like be sure to practice. Don't just take something off the shelf and go out there and try to kill something with it. You need to be, honestly, you need to make some mistakes like you were talking about, cause it's much
maybe
better.
Maybe not my mistake, but yes, mistakes.
Yes. Yeah. But it's much, much better to figure that out now. And, I don't want to shame anybody who might be listening to this, but I will say I was in an archery store, probably 3 weeks ago or something, like right at the end of August. And there were two different guys in there who were not together, like two separate guys buying their very first bow to go on their first archery elk hunt. And, you know, these guys are leaving in like 5 to 7 days, and they don't own a bow. They haven't been practicing. And I just wanted to like go up to him and be like, dude, what are you doing? Like, maybe they don't know better. Maybe that's probably part of the problem. A lot of people probably think it's just like a rifle, you know, you go, you sight it in and you're good. But yeah, like we owe it to the critters that we're hunting to be proficient with the equipment we're using and not just winging it.
100%. Yeah. I mean, they're going to learn. So they're going to learn something.
Yeah.
I agree with you. So the funny thing, you're talking about that kick. I do think it's different a little bit. I can't put my finger on it exactly, but when I go back out to re-sight in, if you will, with the right
with the right
powder charge, I'll give you a better report on what I think about the actual recoil, because I guarantee what I was feeling was exaggerated quite a bit. The other deal too is I did a lot of research, and a bunch of guys put on brakes. So I found a brake that was on sale by Arrowhead Rifle Works, and they might have just been carrying it for someone else. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Put a brake on it, so that'll help a little bit with that kick there. So anyway, thought you'd find that funny, but yeah, that's what I'm taking up into the mountains,
and that hunt
got
is,
some good intel.
That hunt's open sights, right? No scope.
Correct. Yeah, New Mexico just changed that, so there's some Western states, and Colorado might be one of these, that like you have to have, like, you can't even have a peep in the back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I can't remember. Don't quote me on Colorado, but check whatever state you're going to, obviously. But as I was reading the regs, they just have to, it can't be a magnified scope or like an electronic scope. I don't remember exactly how the regs say it for New Mexico. But basically what I've done, I have an aperture in the back. So, you know, a hole to look through in the back. And then the front, I found a company that does like a little globe with an insert that has if you sight it in at 100, it also has a graduated, is that the right way to say it?
Yeah, sure.
No, it's not.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
A little tick mark below it, you know, it's called a stadia line is the word I was looking for. That's what we call them in the Marine Corps for our BDCs. But the next stadia line is for 200 yards. And then I want to say the top of the post that gets a little bit thicker is for like either 250 or 275. So even though it's not magnified, once I get that first one sighted in, I'm going to take just a shot at the recommended distances for those stadia lines, just so I have an idea of where it would hit in case something is farther off. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty cool little sight.
Yeah.
I think Williams is the one that makes it, if anyone mm-hmm. cares, but pretty cool little deal.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, man, I'm excited for you. I've been just recently, I feel like all the effort that I in the past had put towards elk, all that has shifted to mule deer because I was like, screw elk at this point. I hate them. They hate me.
You put in the hours.
I got my truck stolen. I've had so many close calls. Anyway.
That's an awful week last year.
Yeah. And so I haven't talked about it much on the podcast yet, but I'm thinking next year I'm going to put I'm going to try to do some stuff for some mule deer next year. So,
yeah, oh yeah.
I'm excited.
Oh yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Man, time is flying right now. And I definitely want to talk about some duck stuff. And you mentioned you had a crane hunt. Tell us about the crane hunt real quick, and then we'll talk ducks.
All right. I don't know as deep as it is. I just know that I got a spot on a crane hunt outside of Lubbock with a buddy that I made at church. I mean, we're both outdoorsmen, and he asked what I knew about it, and I said nothing, but I'd like to get on a hunt. He said perfect, we got a few openings for one that we're doing in January. So see, I'm just stoked. I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about the meat and everything else, and it's something to check off the list because I mean, the, you know, just such cool animals and not something that we see much around where we're at. So yeah, I'm just excited about it.
Yeah, one thing I just learned this actually yesterday talking to a random guy, he mentioned crow hunt or not sorry not crow sandhill crane in the limit only like 2 or 4 per person.
I think it depends on where you're at. I mean, you might be right. I thought I remembered reading somewhere 3, so yeah, somewhere between 2 and 4.
Yeah, that I don't know why, but that just shocks me. It's just like, you know, out at Randy's place where we hunt out there, it's close to a lake, and I mean, like, I'm not exaggerating. We will have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, fly over like every day. And really? And so the fact that you can only kill like 2 or 3 a day, I don't know why. That just seems odd to me. Like, I would think it'd be almost a free for all, like a snow goose type thing, where, you know, limits like 20 or something. But I don't know. Like,
well, it's funny. I got a cousin who's a diehard waterfowler in Missouri. And they're not allowed to shoot them in Missouri. I mean, some states, you know, they don't even have an open season. So, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the rationale is there. Don't know much about it. I just know that those geese that we shot at your place last year, I made pastrami with them. And, brother, that's like the best lunch meat I've ever had in my life. And the recipe said that it could also be substituted with sandhill cranes. And so any geese or cranes or anything else that I get this year is going straight to deli meat because it's better than any other recipe that I've tried for geese. So there you have it.
Interesting. I think I still have 1 or 2 breast in there. Might have to try that. What was I about to say? Goose, crane. Oh, yeah. You know, just everybody. Yeah. You know, you can't mention the word sandhill crane without somebody somewhere being like, ribeye of the sky, you know, ribeye of the sky.
Oh, exactly. So,
yeah, I've always wanted to try it. Yeah, I think it'd be great. And I'm kind of curious just what it tastes like.
Oh, me too.
Like, is it more beefy? Is that why they call it that? Or is it just good? And so that's why they call it that. I don't know.
I don't know. Hopefully I'll be able to tell you come February.
Yeah. Yeah. You have the right to the best wireless service. Bravado Wireless provides the best mobile wireless, high-speed internet, latest devices, and customer service at prices you feel good about. Bravado Wireless strives to put these values first and offer you the best wireless service available. See what they have to offer at bravadowireless.com or one of their retail locations in eastern Oklahoma. Let Bravado Wireless connect you to your family, friends, and business partners all over the world. Bravado Wireless, the power of connection. Cool, man. So you got that. And I want to talk duck hunting because just like I was talking about how the mule deer have kind of taken over, something about the last month, maybe it's just because like I was looking forward to dove season and everything. But a big part of it, too, also is just you and I did a decent amount of duck hunting last year. I did more last year than I had in the past. And 2 years ago, honestly, it was kind of the podcast that made me kind of get back into it. Cause when I was in high school, I mean, I was duck hunting like 2 or 3 days a week. And, but then just kind of, you know, deer hunting became such a big thing. And when I was working and everything, like I had so much more limited time to hunt in general that if I had the ability to hunt, I wanted to be deer hunting. But like I said, 2 years ago, I kind of got a little bit of, you know, like I said, I was more just kind of going for content for the podcast, but it lit the spark a little bit. And then last year, you and I had that one hunt on that foggy day and we got a couple geese and a limited ducks. And I mean, that lit the fire hardcore. And then before we went on our next hunt, you had gotten that A-frame blind. And my brother came with us and he brought his kids. So we had the kids tucked down around our feet. And, you know, my niece, Emery, with her like golden blonde hair, you know, we were trying to put hats and stuff on her. But yeah, that was my first time hunting out of an A-frame because the hunt before we used layouts, which I had done before. Mm-hmm. But, you know, me and you got out there like an hour early and sat there pulling, you know, ditch grass and we got that thing set up and all grassed in and camoed and stuff. And we didn't have as many birds that time, but I think we shot pretty well. We killed a decent amount. But man, yeah, like that got me fired up. And I don't know why, but for some reason, hunting out of that blind got me even more fired up. I think because it was just more comfortable. So I don't know how many times I duck hunted last year. I did a couple by myself, did a couple with friends. And I am glad my wife doesn't listen to this podcast much because I have spent a lot of money over the past 2 or 3 weeks. I now have my own A-frame. I got one like half off because it was missing a pole. And I was like, I'll figure something out. And so got an A-frame, ordered some more decoys. I ordered one of those little like water shooting butts that you had because I thought that was so cool. That was like the best motion thing I'd ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, man, like I'm ready this year. I'm pumped.
Well, I'm telling you, you hit the nail on the head after we got back from that one where we had that really good mallard hunt. It got me to thinking just about my son. And then we got a little girl on the way, you know, it's going to be a longer amount of time before they're able to go with me to like a bow blind. Mm-hmm. And it'll be quicker for rifle for deer. But with ducks, I can just bundle them up and I can put them in the A-frame like you were talking about. And that was like kind of one of the driving factors why I bought it in the first place. I mean, the second was they were having an extreme sale. It was like a going out of business outdoor sale or something. Anyway, but yeah, that morning was just so fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like they all dumped in at the same time and we were done in like 15 minutes. It was, we had singles and doubles and triples working in, we were shooting good. And I mean, a good, you know, hour long hunt where it's like, hey, sometimes we're shooting, sometimes we're kind of hanging out. We both got bonus birds. It was one of the best duck hunts that I've had. And gosh, I mean, in probably at least 5 years, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And there was something special just that turned in my mind about, hey, if I'm really trying to be a good dad and a good hunter at the same time, if I just switch it up for a few years and maybe pour the coals more to the, to the ducks than to the deer, and it's going to be a quicker avenue to hopefully share more time with my son in the woods, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm agreeing with you is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I talked about it on the podcast. I don't think I did a whole episode on it, but yeah, just if you're a waterfowler, like the perfect conditions, it was a little misty, foggy. It was one of those things like you'd usually hear them before you saw them. We were in layout blinds on a tank dam, had them all grassed in and everything, had a few goose decoys. And I think we shot our limited ducks before we killed any geese. And then I think we had
our limited greenheads.
We didn't
have our bonus ducks yet, but we had our limited greenheads. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And so, but a bunch of geese had been swinging wide of us, but landing in the field, not far from us. And so we decided like, hey, maybe we'll get lucky. Let's just kind of walk out there. And then right after we started walking out there, we saw some ducks land on the pond, and I was like, dude, those are shovelers. Those weren't mallards. So we went and jumped it, cheated a little bit. I mean, not a true duck hunt, whatever. I don't care. We shot one perfectly. So then we had our limits, and then those shots actually scared the geese up, kind of like we thought, and they came over us, and I made the shot of my life and shot one of those suckers way the heck up there. And I like when that thing hit the ground, I mean, it was a thud. It was a thud. And so we got that. And then I think we called, like, we were like, hey, like maybe some more geese will come. And I don't think I had a call. I think you might have had a call. And I had like a half a dozen goose decoys that we had thrown up there. And I think you called over another bunch and we both shot one out of it, maybe, or maybe you shot one and then I shot one out of the next group. Cause I ended up with a grader, but I don't think the grader was the first one I killed. We may have got one.
I can't remember the order. I just do remember that we got two at the same time. And I think it was during that second flyby, you know, just enough with those geese that were on the tank dam to look, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Maybe my first one was the greater. Maybe that's it. And then maybe we each got one out of the next group. But.
Yeah. Either way, it was awesome. And I want to shoot more geese. And so that's why I now have those cutouts. Uh-huh. Now I have like 5 dozen of those cutouts. So if we get to see like, we're not seeing a bunch of ducks, but Big Brother Luke is seeing geese land a whole bunch. Uh-huh. I know someone who's got a few decoys.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. It makes me want to go on a legit goose hunt, which I mean, I guess you could kind of consider ours legit. We don't have the setup. Yeah. We don't have the setup. You know, you hear like true hardcore goose hunters, you know, they got like the 24-foot enclosed trailer packed with like live mounted geese decoys and everything. That's definitely not what we're talking about. Like we just threw a couple out there just in case. And, you know, we sound like a couple teenagers with their voice cracking, trying to call them in, but it worked. It worked.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, doesn't have to be professional to put birds on the ground, at least in our experience, but yeah. I imagine we'd have more if we had a professional out there, but probably we got a few.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, cool, man. Well, we're kind of coming up on time here, and I don't want to take anything else away from you. Man, did we miss anything? Any other random thoughts you got before we get out of here?
Nothing other than I am stoked for the season. Dove hunting was not good to me this year, and I'm just ready to get in trees and get next to tanks and get up in the mountains and, you know, just enjoy God's creation and hopefully harvest some animals. So I'm stoked that it's finally this time of year.
Same here, man. Same here. I almost feel like, I started running trail cameras a little early this year, like June, something, mid-June or something. And it started just because I, for the first time ever, I bought some protein feeders, just trying to hold more deer on our property. I've talked about it on here, how one of our neighbors sold, and I think we're going to have more pressure. So started feeding some protein just to try to hold bucks. So I was running some cameras. And so like, I've been getting pictures of these deer for so long that I feel like I'm almost a little immune to it. Like I don't quite have that same excitement as when I first started getting pictures. They're grown out now. It's not like they're changing or anything like that. But it really honestly just dawned on me a few days ago is like, man, like next weekend, I'm going to be hunting potentially.
Yeah, dude.
Now it's like, okay, like I'm paying a little bit more attention to these pictures. Like what time are they coming in? Where are they coming from? Like it's almost go time. So
Yeah, man. Hey, before you go, check out those pictures that I sent to you, that piebald deer.
Look, I did, man. Yeah, that's not a bad deer.
I mean, he's young. You can tell he's young, but isn't he just so unique? Isn't that cool?
He is, yeah. Yeah, that's really cool.
Anyway, had to get that last point in there. All right, dude. Well, I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun to chat and get excited together about the coming season.
Absolutely, man. Yep, I appreciate it, Charles. And until next time, we'll see you later.
All right, see you, buddy.
That's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed Charles and I's little conversation about just how excited we are that it's time to go hunting. I hope you guys are prepared. I hope you've been practicing. I hope all that hard work comes to fruition. All I can say is stay positive, stay after it, and good things will come. So, as Dan Johnson would say, if you're going to be in a tree, wear your safety harness. As the little kid from Hardball would say, it ain't goodbye, it's see you later. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.